Welcome to your TK Nexus Coach Interaction Podcast. This is where we bring you our fantastic GK Nexus members into the same room as some of the best goalkeeping minds in the world. Coaches who have worked with some of the biggest names in the GK Union while working at some of the biggest football clubs in the world. Sit back, relax, and let's dive into our coaches' knowledge.
It's Coach Interaction Podcast time, ladies and gentlemen. It's David here, and welcome along to this week's special members-only podcast. Today, I'm joined by ex-Manchester United and Manchester City goalkeeper coach, the guru, Mr. Eric Steele, and we are going to discuss his latest content, defending free kicks within a team structure. So once again, thank you so much for your interaction. We have lots of questions to go through, specifically to do with wall positions, ladies and gentlemen. Every day on social media, you will all see discussions around wall positions, how far the wall should be, how many people should be in the wall, should there be a split wall, or should there be any wall at all. It is a fascinating discussion, one that I really enjoyed having with Eric. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get to it. Good afternoon, Mr. Steele. How are you today?
As ever, no problem at all. Thoroughly in a good place. I'm looking forward to this podcast.
So what has Mr. Steele been up to recently?
Mr. Steele has just returned from the famous St. George's Park, having helped staff a UEFA B goalkeeping course for 32 candidates with 8 different countries represented, such as the diversity now of people wanting to come into England, whether it be Scotland, Wales or England, to do the courses.
So the UEFA B GK one is a relatively new licence, Eric. Let's just talk about the licence for our members. It's a little bit like a preparation for the A licence, is that right?
Well, basically, your pathway is once you've attained the UEFA B UEFA B outfield, you can have a choice. Then you can go for the goalkeeping B, which was originally an FA qualification, but now it's been certified and passed by UEFA. So that course now would, if you pass that, for which we are now on our fourth course starting today. So we will then say you've got a passport to work anywhere in Europe, 55 states in Europe, when you have the UEFA B goalkeeping award. You still might have a chance of getting in with the old, but we're going to do some form of conversion course anyway within the FA, so that people that took the old B license 10 years ago, 5 years ago, there'll be regional conversion days over the next year. And then everybody will be credited with UEFA B, so we're coming in line with the rest of Europe. And it's a passport to go and work anywhere. You get the UEFA B goalkeeping and the UEFA A, the topper license. You've then got, like we call it, a passport to go and work anywhere in the UEFA, which is 55 countries.
So talking previously about the A license and having some experience myself, Eric, a lot of it is around working in and around with the coaches, the first team coaches, etc. Is the UEFA B tailored towards that slightly as well?
Yes, an introduction to say that we don't want you to be the old-fashioned coach in the corner with the discs and the goalkeepers in isolation. We want the goalkeeping coach, as we've spoke a lot of with the GK Nexus coaches, we want the goalkeeper coach to be part of the coaching team. And that ultimately, hopefully, will lead to the goalkeeper being approached and being looked at as part of the team Monday to Friday, not just on certain days. So it is a move that it's reality-based learning tells us that you must plan, do, review all the various details I've tried to pass on to the Nexus coaches. We are doing that, and we've started the process at the B license level. We've been doing it for years to try and get goalkeeper coaches recognised by head coaches, assistant coaches, and we're slowly, slowly winning the battle.
Let's just talk about the winter break that's just happening in England just now. This is the first time that it's happened in the Premier League. How do you feel it's being received by the players and coaches?
My conversations with managers and players has been that they've welcomed the fact they've got a break. I think they would have welcomed it more if it had been in December, January, which is a more natural halfway through. But this is a massive progress that we've always been out of line with people like the Germans, the Dutch, Spanish, French, where they do have Christmas breaks. So in Holland they go away, a lot of the coaches go skiing end of December. What a great life. While we're going through 10 games, 10 days, and we'll put 4 games in the programme. So I'm all in favour where, for me, Premier League and the FA have got it wrong. I've said all along we're going to burn out. We're asking players to do internationally. Think about the number of players who have done 11-month seasons over the last 3 years. So to have any form of break just to give that body a chance to come down off the intensity will be really welcomed by the players and by the coaches alike. It gives you the chance to get players back, whereas you're not rushing to try and think, should we push them a bit harder to go for this Saturday? Well, no, you know you've got now a 2-week break where that would do the player coming very close to injury to get back in. I think we're in very, very grave danger that if we don't do something, we are going to burn out our top players. We've just spent all this time and effort getting our players into winning teams internationally and within the Premier League. You know, we've got the European champions in Liverpool with 4 or 5 English players playing and a Scottish player. It's terrific for the game in England. What my worry is, if you look at poor Harry Kane, he's had an injury in both seasons since he's done 11-month season with the World Cup, 11-month season last year with the Nations Cup. We're now going to go to European Championships. That's another 11-month season. You're asking players at the top level to be playing all season and then peak for the country at the end. It's impossible. It can't keep going. So any form of international break, that's why it's been welcomed by coaches and players alike.
I totally agree with you, Eric. I mean, poor old Scotland here, we've not qualified for a major tournament in over 20 years. And for me, it's just only down to one reason, Eric, and that's the fact that they're working these players too much.
Well, I think it's totally true. Just the number of games, well, you can look upon that. You look at any, you'll grab any branch you lot. You know what you need? You need more players being recognised that go from Scotland down to England. When I started playing the game in 72 as a pro, most of the teams in England had 4 or 5 Scotsmen in the team. And that for me is what's wrong. You've got the boy Robertson doing terrific at Liverpool.
Yeah.
We haven't got enough of that. So, you know, obviously they're trying to raise the bar in Scotland, then obviously if we, you'll end up losing your best players. But that's the only way you can improve, by getting that Scottish league more competitive and not just having the 2 teams. And that's going to take you a while. You know, we've now for the first time got a percentage high. The highest percentage we've got this year of English players playing in the Premier League. We're waiting on the figures coming out, but we've been so low at 27-28% players playing in the Premier League. Compared to Germany, have 60% Germans playing. The Spanish have 55-65% of the players playing in Spain are Spanish. We've been way below that.
And do you think St George's Park's got something to do with that, Eric?
Without a doubt. I think that what we've done is we said, look, we've now got a top world-class environment to bring our players into, but not also in addition to that, David, I think what we've done is we have improved the coaching system, and that I've always said, you can't improve the players, the goalkeepers, the coaches, the managers, until you improve the coaches. And that's what St George has done. So there's been a massive link. Dan Ashworth's been a major part when he was in charge of making sure we have the similar messages going from coach education into teams. Now that inevitably then, that spread from the teams to the club football as well. We've got great relationships now with the Premier League, the Championship, wherever our international players are based. Now that can only be a good thing. And if you look at St George's now 7 years old, look what we've done in the last 7 years. It took 3-4 years, but then we've won the Worlds at 17, at 20s. We've won the Euros at 19. We've got the semi-finals under 21s. We've got the Worlds with the men's. The women have got the semi-finals. That has all happened in the last 4 or 5 years. So it's took time to bed it in, but we're now seeing the benefit. And hopefully, you know, we're going to have successful tournaments in the summer with the seniors and the under 21s.
And another thing it's good for as well, Eric, I just want to give a little shout out to young Teddy. Teddy Sharman Lowe, who's been part of the GK Nexus content, and he's just received a call up to the under 17 squad as well.
Yeah, he's off abroad and he joined them up on Sunday, equipped with some gloves very kindly donated by Mr. Steele. So we've wished him well, and yeah, it's terrific because some of the Nexus coaches will have remembered when he was a slight frame of a lad when we first started doing this. And you look at him now, there's his reward. Delighted for him, delighted for Burton Albion, you know, who's really, they're only in the infancy of their academy setup. So it's terrific for them to see, A, players getting through from academy via Dan Robinson and his staff into first team, but also now all of a sudden Teddy, who's been on the bench for the first team, he's trained with the first team, to all of a sudden be recognised at England level. It's another great step for both the player, and I'm sure his family are very proud, but also for Burton Albion as a club, who've been terrific supporters of GK Nexus.
Yeah, another big shout out to Dan Robinson. He's done an absolutely fantastic job at Burton, and he's very, very helpful for GK Nexus as well. So keep it going, the guys at Burton Albion. So Eric, just moving on, we are going to talk about the latest content that you've provided for the GK Nexus members, and that was defending free kicks, both wide and central. So as always, the content was very well received. We had lots of social media views and interaction on there. So we have some questions sent in for you, and I'm going to go through the wide free kicks first, Eric. So we had a two-man wall when defending wide free kicks. Yeah. One member is asking you, would you consider using a split wall when defending free kicks from the wide areas?
Yeah, we have considered it. It's tried it, and it's down to two things. Is the goalkeeper happy with when you split the wall? So England at first team level at the moment use a split wall in wide areas. Gus Poyet, when he was a manager at Brighton, he employed it as well. And basically what it was, that if it's set up correctly, that you have two men on the ball, you drop the inside man 5 yards back. What they found was it was supposed to deter the right footer in particular trying to score the near post area. So it has been trialled. We tried it when I was working with teams, and goalkeeper and players alike didn't like it. But I know Martin Margeson, the senior goalkeeping coach for England, they do use it in wide areas. So again, it's about preference. And this is about, back to something we mentioned on the previous podcast. I ask a lot of the coaches when we join up, how much time do you spend in a week on defending free kicks? And what frightens me is I hear 5 minutes, 10 minutes, throw away on a Friday, day before a game. The teams that are successful defending wide central free kicks, corners as we've discussed, are the teams that spend over an hour, hour and a half in a week. So that what you do is you have to ask, let the players buy into it. What are you comfortable with? What is the goalkeeper comfortable with? He's the prime organiser on the set plays. So it's, if he likes to split wall and it works, you go for it. If you haven't got the personnel, if you've got only dots, it won't work. You have to have bigger people in terms of that split wall to deter the ball being whipped in. And if we're talking at top level, so the GKNX coaches, as long as you're organised, think what that does to an opposition. If you get everybody back quickly, set up, whether it's a one man, a two man, or a split wall, then your back four, then your man behind that, your two men in the hole ready for the second ball, you see what that does to the opposition. Liverpool last year had the best record, and you could see why. They sprinted back in, a point I made. So it's down to preference, but it's also down to, why don't you ask the players? What do they prefer? That's something that you could do as a GK Nexus coach.
And sticking with the wide free kick, Eric, we had the two-man wall there, but we also had two players standing over to take it. If there was only one player standing over the ball, would you sacrifice a person in the wall and only have a one-man wall there?
Without a doubt. And then what you would do then, you would say to your man in the space, who was normally level with the near post, the front post, he would probably just adopt a slightly deeper position to deal with the whipped-in ball. I would, if I said to you now, Ronaldo, so the GK coaches, let's see what you think of this one. If you've got Ronaldo on that wide free kick, I would personally leave two men in the wall. Why do you think that would happen, David?
Well, we can get that movement of the ball, can't he?
Yeah. I just think if you give somebody who is superb, think of Coutinho, who left Liverpool to go to Barca. If you left him a one-man wall, I know what he would do. So depend upon your level, depend upon the quality of the opposition, I would sometimes be tempted to say, do you know what? I'm going to leave the two-man wall in there because this guy can shoot from there. So again, it depends on if the wide free kick is very close to the area, I think there's a temptation to leave two. Let's say it's 2 yards off the line, the touch line, I think you'd go to one. So again, it's down to where the actual free kick's taken and also the personnel that you've got. If you've only got small dots, let's say if you've got Mason Mount and Raheem Sterling in a two-man wall, for me, you may as well make it one because the good players are going to bend it around them anyway. If you put Jordan Henderson in there with Gomez, I think, do you know what? I think they might just look to hit the ball longer, which is what you want from a wide free kick.
Just touching on Ronaldo, Eric, because I've had a very interesting conversation about this before. Now, we all know the movement of the ball Ronaldo can get. He gets it so high and he dips it. So sometimes you're effectively wasting your time by having a wall there because you can get that dip in motion. So people have spoke about, should we intentionally move the wall to 13, 14, 15 yards to try and basically cancel out that dipping effect it can have?
I think it depends on how far he's out. If Ronaldo's 25 yards out, I would always have the wall, because what you need to do is to say to him, take away one part, one target of that goal. I've actually asked him when I did work with him when he was at Man United. So ultimately, that's where I've said to him, no, I wouldn't change the wall. I'd keep it exactly the same. If you actually said to him, if the wall went away, he would love that. He would have loved if anybody just said, go on, then you be the goalkeeper. Whenever he says, take the wall away, I'll turn around and say, tell you what, you let Ronaldo shoot from 20 yards, that goalkeeper, you've got less chance. If you've got a four-man wall that can protect part of that goal, trust me, I'll take that four-man wall anytime. Most people in the Premier League have got people that can put ball over the wall, that can actually do what Ronaldo's done. Everybody in that Premier League has got somebody. Jack Grealish for Villa. They've got people that can actually take that ball, whip it over the wall. So ultimately, I always said, you make the goal smaller. If you take the wall away, you're making that goal look huge to somebody who's hitting the ball from 20, 25 yards.
So that was one of the questions we did have sent in, Eric. Would you consider having no wall from a certain distance? So you're having walls anywhere 30 yards and in?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, 30 yards in. Probably when it goes to 35 yards, I'm happy to say no problem.
Maybe just have one, your striker fall back in front?
Yeah, just get your striker or a two-man wall just to say one as a distraction.
Yeah.
I think you've always got to make that target look smaller. If you reverse it, I often said this to goalkeepers, and they all fancy themselves as dead ball kickers. If you say, go on, we're having 20 minutes at the end, and we're doing direct free kicks, put the goalkeeper, who's been in goal, go and take a free kick now. And they see how difficult it is to get over, to get round a wall. It's such a skill. But ultimately, you know, you saw Rooney, which is what I said, there's Wayne Rooney scores a great goal on a free kick last Friday against Stoke. Why? That's it. You're talking about a top player with world class moments. That's what they can do. He mightn't do it the next time, but I'll tell you what. I would back him 6, 7, 8 out of ten to hit the target with the ball and make the goalkeeper work. And all right, I've often said it. If he puts that ball where he did on Friday, Jack Butland's got no chance. He had a big wall. So if he took the wall away, would Jack have got there? Jack would have then had to stand central. What would that meant for Rooney? Rooney could have gone, do you know what? I can whip this across him. I can whip it in the corner that he did, or I can go right across him the opposite way. But as soon as you put a four-man wall up, Rooney's going, do you know what? There's only one part of the goal I can score in. And that's a skill test. And if you've got world-class moments in players, that's what they do. And if it's a yard and a half inside, Jack would have made a great save. But if anything goes in that top bin, you've got to put your hand up and go, great free kick. What you should be doing is saying to the people that give the free kick away, what are you doing when you've got Ronaldo against you, Rooney, Coutinho against you? Don't do it. Don't give needless free kicks away. That's the answer which we all talk about when we give any form of coaching topics, reference defending free kicks. Don't give them away. That's the easiest solution.
And another interesting conversation that many people have had on social media, Eric, is the split wall. So having a gap in the middle, which allows the goalkeeper a good line of vision and it allows the goalkeeper to also take up a more central position within the goal. What is your thoughts around the split wall?
As soon as it goes to split wall, the first thing they do, if the opposition have got a left and a right footer, that didn't half make the options.
Yeah.
Because you've got a gap. If they've got a team that's got a good left foot and a good right footer, you with a split wall, you are giving them a massive advantage again. So I still go back to it.
So just talking about that advantage, Eric, you're referring to basically curl the ball within the gap and then out again towards the posts, yeah?
Yeah. If I'm a left footer facing up, I know where I'm going to go. See the goalkeeper central, I'm going to whip it right through the middle on the bend into his left shoulder corner. If I'm right, I'm going to bend it the opposite way in his right shoulder corner. Whereas you put a four-man wall up, you've got to make a decision. Is it left? Is it right footer? You've got to minimise. This is why I'm saying, listen to the detail that you and I have discussed in the last 10 minutes. This is why I can never understand why coaches, managers don't spend long enough on doing this. Set pieces win and lose your games. The last World Cup, 43% of goals were scored from set pieces. Penalties, free kicks, corners. 43%. And I bet the teams didn't spend 43% of their week defending set plays. You'd be lucky it was 4%, 2%. But the teams that were successful, the best teams are the ones that don't give free kicks away in their defensive third, or B, so well organised and drilled, they know exactly what to do in every scenario. And C, they've got a will and a desire not to be beaten.
Now, one of the messages we always share on GK Nexus, Eric, is trying to make our training sessions replicate the game and how they look for our goalkeepers. So just regarding that high percentage there in the World Cup of set play goals, it would be really interesting to hear from our members what that percentage looks like at the level they play at, whether that be under 10s or under 12s or under 16s. We would love to hear some of that information, wouldn't we?
Yeah, get them, get back to you on a text or social media and just say, well, if they've managed to work it out, if they keep a record as to how they've conceded, which most good coaches do, goalkeeper coaches do, because they need to produce evidence sometimes on them when the coach says, why do you need more time on that? Why do we need to do more time defending crossing? I'll tell you what I would do. Over the last 5 games, we conceded 8 goals, 6 of which have been from crosses. So there's a 70-80% success rate for the opposition against us dealing with crosses. You could do similar in terms of how goals were scored.
So let's get on to the conversation of chargers, Eric. We had a lot of views on this and a lot of different opinions on it. Mostly in favour of having the chargers there, they liked the idea, but there was some concerns around possibly blocking the goalkeeper's eye line, especially if the opposition players were in that area, and it increases the chances of deflections. What is your thoughts around that?
I'll go back to it. I still want the goal to be made smaller, not bigger. And by having the two chargers, if you do it and you stand behind the ball and set it, you've got at least a yard. Like I said, the first charge is a yard touching from the wall. That's the gap that the goalkeeper needs. So then what you're doing is that's blocking off part of the side of the goal where the goalkeeper's going to look after. Your second charger will virtually be in line with a post. That says to the guy, can I bend it round the charger? What it also does then is it sets you up by having the two chargers for when the ball's moved. So it's a dual purpose. Put your guys in that charging role, make them look big when they're looking and organising their set piece, and then it deters that. Actually, if it puts any doubt in the striker's mind, that's what it's there for. It's to make the goal look smaller. Again, some goalkeepers prefer one charger to two chargers. I think I asked them all to go on YouTube and have a look at it, and just have a look at the goal that Mahrez scores for Man City at Everton. Jordan Pickford, our number one, gets beaten on the side of his goal. Have a look where Delph was in relation to the ball. The gap is like 3-4 men. There was such a big gap. Mahrez couldn't fail to hit the target that side. He hits that at 60-70 mile an hour. As it happened, Jordan's not seen that ball late on. Narrow the gap, make the goal smaller. Then you've also got the chargers that if they decide to be clever and try and move the ball, you've got first charger can go at the first movement. If they move it and shift it further over, the second charger goes. So again, it's back to organisation. There's always a risk and reward in what you do. I can understand why certain goalkeepers go, I only want one charger. No problem. Opposite job, second charger, go and help the two central defenders who might have 3 to mark, 4 to mark. Again, preference. What does the goalkeeper want? What is the goalkeeper, what is the back four? What are they happy doing?
So with regards to the setup, Eric, obviously we had the wall set up and we had the person off the wall, and we also had the two chargers, and then we also had the two centre-halves in marking the bodies. Now, what if we had an overload of attackers in that kind of back post area? Attackers that want to go and attack the ball. So we've only got two defenders there, but there might be three attackers, sometimes four attackers. So they've got an overload of players there. What's your thoughts on that? Would you sacrifice somebody out the wall, or would you sacrifice any of the chargers?
If it's as direct as we showed when we did the actual video that went online, I wouldn't. I'd leave them as they are, because I would say that there's a 95% chance that they are going to try and do one thing when they're in a central position 25 yards out. That's going to be one very delicate chip to affect your two top headers of the ball and your two defenders. I would always defend my goal first and foremost. If it's slightly offset, if it's further out, if it's 35 yards and it's, let's say, it's level with the line in the 6 yard box and they put three in there, possibly. If you've got two chargers and you want to put one of the chargers there, fine, you can do that. When it's a three-man wall, you drop one of your defenders out anyway to join your two centre-halves. Again, it's cat and mouse, risk and reward. I think if you're central, you still make the goal look smaller. I'd be delighted as a goalkeeper if Ronaldo's 25 yards out and he tries and chips a ball to the centre-half, which is going to be at least 10 yards out, which I'd back my goalkeeper to deal with a header anyway. And if they do win it, second ball, we've got a four-man wall that will drop in and look for the second ball and look to clear it. Whereas on the other hand, I think we're saying, go on, man, try and beat us from 25 yards with a four-man wall and two charges, where we've made the goal look smaller.
And another really interesting question we had sent in, Eric, around defending free kicks. Have you ever changed your setup depending on the individual strengths of a specific goalkeeper?
Yeah, without a doubt. If we had a smaller goalkeeper, we've always had a bigger wall, because he was happier the fact that he had the biggest wall. The only other time is when we've had goalkeepers that were preference was not to have two chargers, as I've just mentioned. But majority of the time, I've held that formula for nearly 25, 30 years. That was a formula I used when I played. And then I've done various other systems on wide free kicks, on defending corners, but on central free kicks, which is the most important one, I've nearly always bowed to the wishes of the goalkeeper I was coaching or myself when I played. And again, I'm back to high percentage, would say, I want a four-man wall. I see the reason for the two charges. We've tried it. The good thing is about things like this is it's a good thing to try in training. You know, you've won the game on the Saturday, you might have 20 minutes on a Thursday morning or whatever, or it might be an evening session if you're part-time, and say, go on, have a go at it. Split the wall and have a go. See what you think. So you're trial and error. But ultimately, it still comes down for me to what's the strengths of the team. If you've got a big team and you put a big wall in, your goalkeeper's going to be delighted. So the only time really is when the goalkeeper has a preference to say, no, I only want three in the wall. I never had five in the wall. I've never coached five in the wall. Because I've always believed the goalkeeper needs to see the ball. As soon as you put five players in, and the new ruling now is you're not allowed anyway in a four or five-man wall to stand next to the wall. So what they're doing now is they're blocking off. They're standing very cute 2 yards away. That presents a massive problem for the goalkeeper.
Regarding walls and distances, Eric, because we've had a few questions sent on that. Do you have a certain rule for a certain amount of bodies in the wall depending on the distance, whether it be 20 yards, 25, 30, 35?
It's more the fact if it's central, it's a four-man wall. If it's off-centre, it's three. If it's wide, it's two. Very rarely, it's five. The only other one we did on the day was when we did the indirect free kick. Well, it's 10 yards, 12 yards from the goal, where everybody goes on the line, and you have two charges and a goalkeeper, where there's been some incident with a back pass rule or the referee's given indirect free kick 10, 12 yards out. But generally, I've always had the 4-3-2 rule and never had a five-man wall.
And another thing we've not spoken about yet, Eric, is if there's only one player standing over the central free kick, so if there's only a right footer over that free kick, we can afford to move the wall slightly towards one side, because he's not going to hit it with the outside of his right foot and curl it around the wall on the outside.
That's again is the preference, and that's where you do your homework. If it's central, goalkeeper has to pre-look at it and go, right, if it's right footed or left footed, what's his favourite side? That's where again at the top level with the aid now of all the different technology we've got, where there's cameras everywhere, even if you look at levels of football, you've got games now being covered, you've got, with the advent of the social media, you've got games being put on YouTube within hours. What you do is you do your research, and when it's a central free kick, you really have to say and be guided by the success rate of the player that's going to take it, and then you've got the success rate of what the goalkeeper would prefer. Goalkeeper might have a side he prefers, in which case, if it's a right footer, I'd probably put the wall on the right hand side and say, if you're going to bend it, I'm going to stand on the left hand side. But then he's got the chance then to bend it over the wall in the opposite corner.
The goalkeeper's left hand side.
Yeah, I might stand there and say, go on then, put the wall up on the right and set the striker, go on, I challenge you. Can you put it over the wall? Or you go the other way and you say, put the wall on the opposite side, he's got to bend it to the left side of me, and I've got to defend the right side of the goal. It depends very much on the preference of the goalkeeper and also the team that they're happy with it. But again, you've got to do your research. If you haven't had, the hardest part used to be that we never had enough footage on penalty takers. Now, dear me, you can go to youth level, under 14s, 15s, 16s, you've got information on all sorts of different systems that gives you the takers for the penalties, free kicks, etc. So you've got a lot of research now to look into, so you should be better prepared. But do you use that to your advantage in making sure that you do a practice and rehearsal on defending wide and central free kicks?
So Eric, that brings us to the end of the full free kick content. We have done all of the sessions around free kicks and corner kicks, and we've done the podcast now as well. So it's on to some new content ideas, and but we would love to hear some ideas from the members on the next content they would like to see.
Yeah, without a doubt. We've asked this before and we haven't had much feedback on that, David, have we?
Well, we had feedback last time. That was they wanted some free kicks and set pieces, so we went and delivered that.
There you go. Come on, man. Save me working too hard thinking what I'm going to do next for you all.
So, Eric, thank you again for joining me today. It's a pleasure as always. I will be catching up with you very soon.
Cheers, my man. Thank you so much. Good luck to all our GK Nexus coaches. Plan, do, review, be inventive, please.
Thank you once again to the guru, Mr. Eric Steele, for joining me today in what was a fascinating podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it. Now, next week, we have hitting the members area, Thomas Schleich's brand new theory presentation, and that is tactical behaviour in goal defence. This is another fantastic presentation with lots of content involved in it, and I can't wait to put that on there for you guys. After that, we also have a new session from Andy Coy. Now, since Andy Coy's came on the platform, he has moved positions from Stoke City to Brentford. So we congratulate Andy on that great move for him, and we can't wait to show more of his content. So ladies and gentlemen, have a fantastic week with your goalkeepers, with your families, and I hope to catch up with you very, very soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening and, of course, interacting with our GK Nexus coaches. Remember, every week you have the opportunity to pick the brains of some of the best goalkeeper coaches in the world. If you'd like any guidance on your coaching journey, please let us help. Reach out to us with your questions by emailing us at contact@gknexus.com.